This is episode 82 of the Angry Tech News Podcast for Wednesday, May 8th, 2024.
This is the Angry Tech News Podcast at angrytechnews.com. Now your host, the angry programmer with a mic, Ryan Bemrose.
So, yeah, those of you who've been paying attention may have noticed that I keep to a slightly less than weekly schedule these days. Angry Tech News has been more of a digest show that I've done when I can. Really, when I need to clear my tabs is when I do it these days, and it's been a long time. Or when I've got a tech rant that will not fit into Mastodon's 500-character limit, which, let's be honest, is all of my tech rants. Although, for those who don't follow my actual weekly show, usually Grumpy Old Ben's, which is not happening right now because my co-host Darren O is unavailable, so we're doing Angry Tech News. But I, in case you didn't know, I am now running my own Pleroma instance, which does not have any such character limit. So if you're listening to this and you're one of those weirdos with a desperate need to follow day-to-day insights, memes, and sarcasm of Ryan Bemrose, then you can follow me in my current home on the Fediverse at ryan@bemrose.social, accessible through Mastodon or any other full-featured ActivityPub portal. If, however, you would prefer to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Threads, or any of the other data-selling, censorious, big corporate social networks, well, tough. I don't have accounts there. It's ryan@bemrose.social. It's Mastodon only because that is a decentralized open platform that is not... Well, the only person stealing my data is the admin of bemrose.social, and since that's me, I don't trust him at all. Anyway, time to clear some tabs. But first, a rant. From the perspective of a satisfied user of a product, software updates are, at best, a neutral value proposition. We put up with them because we're told to, but most users secretly dread update day because it's disruptive. I'm pretty sure developers know this, even if they won't admit it to themselves. I explain. Software updates generally come with three types of changes in them: new features, bug fixes, and regressions. New features don't really move the value equation for existing users. They didn't use the feature before, obviously, and people being largely creatures of habit, the majority of new users or of existing users will not jump onto the feature immediately afterward. Besides, the purchase decision has already been made for existing users without any features that didn't exist at the time. Bug fixes are welcomed, but for a working product tend to be very situational. In an established product, the widespread bugs have been largely worked out, and what's left are the obscure ones affecting a tiny portion of the user base. A user who's happy with your product likely isn't impacted by that many bugs, so a bug fix is going to have a low impact on the value equation. A user who's encountered a lot of bugs might be helped more by a bug fix update, but they just as well might have quit the product altogether because it was a buggy POS. The only users with significant positive value from bug fixes are the middle ones who are experiencing bugs but suffer through the software anyway. This leaves regressions as the only change an update can bring that affects the most established and satisfied users, and it affects the value negatively. To someone who relies on software to get a job done, a regression can completely break a workflow that was otherwise working fine. Anyway, I just had to get that off my chest. You've heard me complain about updates before. You know that there's nothing more that I should be saying. You know what? Let's just do this. From the Here's Looking at You department, a Consumer Reports journalist was alerted to a problem by being sent a message with a video of herself waving to her own back door. Read into that sentence what you will. I got it from Consumer Reports. This was a message sent in by one of Consumer Reports' own white hat 3,000 miles away, who hacked into the person's doorbell camera. I don't know why she had a doorbell in her back door. I got to stay away from the phrasing. Okay. At least a dozen brands of doorbell cameras have been identified by Consumer Reports as having almost identical vulnerability. The brands are Eakin, Tuck, Fishbot, Rake Blue, Ando, Jemmy, and Luckwolf, or at least they were at the time. More on the brand names later. All of these brands had identical feature sets, identical device form factor, and even the box that they came in looked identical. They were all made by Chinese manufacturer Eakin, sold by Amazon, Walmart, Sears. Wait, does Sears still exist in the U.S.? Anyway, they got the label Amazon's Choice Overall Pick, and they were a significantly cheaper option compared to the Nest or Ring or the brand name ones. So a lot of people went out and went, I could use a video doorbell. Let's grab this one. Well, if you did, and you hooked it up to your home's Wi-Fi, which you should never do. Quick advice, if you ever get an IoT device of any kind, it's a device that plugs in, it just, you know, you give it power, you give it your Wi-Fi, never connect it to your main Wi-Fi because these things are notoriously bad on security. If you have to connect a device to Wi-Fi at all, and you're ignoring my advice not to get these things, then at the very least, put it on a guest network. Most routers have a guest network you can use for that. But if you put it on your main one, then this thing immediately exposed to just about anybody who knew the hack, your home IP, your Wi-Fi names, the MAC addresses of your all devices on there. There was no encryption. Anyone standing in order to hack this thing, all you had to do, somebody could walk up to your front doorbell with an app on their phone, hold down the doorbell button for 10 seconds. That puts the thing into pairing mode, and then they add their own device to the admin list, making themselves the new owner of your camera. They have to do this by standing at your front door once. But once they do that, the original owner will get an email alert and then nothing because the email can be changed and you get nothing at all. All you know is that your camera is still attached to the front of your house. Once the hacker is paired once, they can, by the way, if you think, oh, I can fix this by repairing. No, the hacker, once they have the app, the device's ID in their phone, can remotely pair it from anywhere on the internet at any time using the serial number of your device. The company offers absolutely no information whatsoever about how the data they collect is stored. One can presume it's on a server in China somewhere. That's all we know. There's even odds, by the way, if you have this camera, that your serial number is already in the cloud, probably along with pics of you nude sunbathing. And trust me, even if you're certain you've not done any nude sunbathing in front of one of your doorbell cameras, they have AI that can whip that up pretty quickly. The article points out multiple times the usual trope about domestic violence victims and danger from abusive exes or spouses. It's a little ad nauseum for my tastes, but that's what woke media is like. It is, however, a real security concern, even if you're not a victim of domestic violence, or even if you're not perpetrating it. I don't judge. If you buy one of these things, the marketing on it is selling you safety. And you think that, oh, it's good because you trust recommendations like Amazon's Choice, and you end up being significantly less safe in ways that you don't even realize. Consumer Reports recommends that if you own a cheap Chinese knockoff spy camera, that you disconnect it immediately and replace it with a more secure American brand like Ring or Logitech, ensuring that when all your data and videos are collected, stored in a data center somewhere, and ultimately breached and leaked to the dark web, at least it'll be an American company that does it. This story, by the way, is one of those tabs I've had open for quite a while. The original story was from February 29th. Consumer Reports did issue an update in March that says that Eakin has issued fixes and promises in the next generation of products that they'll do better. But between the lines, they don't have a remote security update channel, so they can't update any of the ones already sold or shipped. They very much promise the issues will be fixed, but there's nothing enforcing them to follow up. So if you go out and buy a brand new one from these people, maybe it's fixed, maybe not. The doorbells that Consumer Reports reviewed are no longer available online. However, Amazon is now selling ones that look very, very similar under new brands, iWit and Sunny Jane. This again in the update from March, so at this point, those brands might not even be around because it's May. And it might be something else. A caveat emptor, buyer beware. After all, these people are going to continue selling stuff, and they're probably going to keep selling the ones that do not have any security patches because they got to get rid of the excess inventory of defective products. So what the hey, just rebrand and offload them onto the next crop of rubes who trust Amazon's recommendations, right? From the AI in all the things department, Logitech is releasing their brand new M750 mouse. What does it do? It's an M650 with an AI button. The new button automatically launches ChatGPT Builder, which is Logitech's new version of putting AI in all the things. This assumes that you have their Options Plus app installed, because otherwise the button just switches the DPI on the mouse, whatever. The Options Plus app, if you're not familiar with Logitech, is a download the size of a DVD image, which once you install it, runs on startup using constant CPU, not a lot, but some, also using constant battery for those of you whose gaming PCs aren't tethered to the grid, and uses hundreds of megabytes of memory. So what does it do for all of this? Well, it collects data about you, I guess your mouse movements, more likely what you're clicking on, what windows, I don't know. I don't know what data it's collecting. You can just assume in these days everything collects data and sends it to Logitech. It seems to, at least when I installed it on my machine, one of the major features that it did was it would update itself almost every day. I mean, that's very important. It uses memory, quite a lot of memory. Did I mention that? And for the things that people might want, enables profiles, which slightly change up how your mouse behaves depending on which programs are running. I guess higher DPI or lower DPI for different games? I'm not really sure. And the other thing it does, and the reason that I tried installing it for a while before I got sick of it, was it enables mapping of the extended mouse buttons. Windows, by default, understands the concept of five buttons on a mouse, left, right, mouse wheel, or left, right, middle, forward, and back. Middle is usually clicking the mouse wheel. And then it also handles mouse wheel up and down and moving the mouse. Any other buttons on your mouse are things that have to be attached by a special driver, which is where Logitech comes in. But what I learned is I can usually get access to those with AutoHotkey. So that's what I did, which is a whole lot lighter program than Logitech stuff. Anyway, the new 750 has an AI button, which is totally not worth the full release, but that's okay. The AI button, not only in addition to requiring you to have a Logitech 750 and an Options Plus app, also requires you to have a ChatGPT account because it shells everything out to OpenAI. By the way, several new Logitech keyboards have the same button, so at least if you have a Logitech mouse and a keyboard, you only have to install the app once. The Ars Technica headline, they kind of had a bent. Tech brands are forcing AI into your gadgets whether you asked for it or not. And as much as I hate agreeing with Ars Technica, they're right. Some of the other things that they brought up in the article was some ChatGPT-enabled earbuds from a company called Nothing. I had not heard of these guys, but apparently they create a phone and they create all kinds of gadgets to go with it. They really want to just be your Apple, I think. Anyway, the earbuds are called Nothing Ear, which requires a Nothing Phone 2 running the Nothing OS. Oh, and a ChatGPT account, of course. They also mention a Microsoft standard keyboard got a new AI button, which launches Copilot, which is a Windows 11 feature that nobody asked for. Copilot, by the way, requires that you log into Microsoft account and, by the way, to have a ChatGPT account. Although, one of the things that people figured out real quickly is that if you don't have a keyboard with an AI button, at least you can get your one-click Copilot launch that you probably don't want by hitting Shift Win plus F23. You do have an F23 key on your keyboard, right? Yeah, well, that key can also be reprogrammed with AutoHotkey if you desperately want something to launch Copilot with. But it can't be reprogrammed with anything that Microsoft offers, of course. I can already anticipate the rage from gamers who, during a particularly hairy full-screen firefight, accidentally hit the AI key on their Microsoft keyboard, causing their game to tab out and Windows to display the Copilot AI prompt. Hi, I'm Cortana! From the You Thought It Couldn't Get Worse department, this one's not really news, more just a speculation story from some industry bigwig who clearly knows business well enough to become an industry bigwig, but let us not forget that the skill set required to become an industry bigwig does not necessarily include any technical knowledge whatsoever. However, this story entertained me and prompted my sarcasm generator, so I'm bringing it to you. This is via Financial Times, who does not get my click because of their paywall, so I got it from TechSpot. The headline, AI could destroy the call center industry. The gist of the story, when you interact with a big company's call center, the voice on the other end, who, by the way, already sounds like a soulless automaton reading practiced pre-written lines, telling you to try the same thing everyone else tried, often unable or unwilling to work with you to actually solve the problem. Did you try turning it off and back on again? Yeah, okay. It's not usually the employee's fault. They get penalized in their job if they deviate from the script. Even if they want to solve your problem and they know that the script won't do it, it's not usually worth their job to try to help you. So if there ever was a task that should be done by a ChatGPT AI, this is it. The laughable part is thinking that a ChatGPT AI could do it. K. Krithivasan, I should not have written this name down because I don't know how to pronounce it. Krithivasan, the head of Tata Consultancy Services, big IT in India, says, "We are in a situation where the technology should be able to predict a call coming and then proactively address the customer's pain point within a year." Yeah, right. They can't even get voice recognition correct. How many times have you been on a call and you've been shouting at the computerized skip logic gauntlet that everybody has to pass before even being allowed to talk to a human being? It usually goes something like this. If you're listening aside, yes, no, yes, 6, 5, 3, no, accounts department, yes, I said yes, yes, I said yes, you goddamn machine, yes, no, please, just put a human on the phone, no, human, I said human, what, stop talking, shut up, you dung heap piece of logic fried garbage, so help me when I get off this call, I'm going to come over there and rip your circuits out of your RS-232 hole and shove them where your AI don't shine, you retarded piece of computerized garbage. The one bright spot is knowing that there will be AI services to help navigate these Byzantine systems. I, for one, look forward to having my AI call the company's AI to engage in a battle royale in order to cancel my subscription. From the semi-autonomous collisions department, the U.S. National Traffic Safety Bureaucracy released a 3-year analysis of 956 vehicle crashes in which Tesla's autopilot feature was thought to have been in use, according to CNBC. The study found that autopilot contributed to, quote, at least 467 of those collisions. And if you're mathing, that is nearly half. The gist of the problem identified by the NHTSA is pretty much what smart car haters have been saying for years. Autopilot does all of the boring parts of driving for you. By the way, this is not the full self-driving. That has never worked, and Tesla's never really shipped it outside of beta. Autopilot is the one, it does all the boring parts of driving for you. The steering, the speed control, the keeping in the lane. Whenever driving is boring and normal and nothing unexpected occurs, that is 99% of the driving. That's the boring parts in which a human can just sit back and the computer can do all the work. But autopilot is not fully autonomous, meaning that when the really exciting things happen on the road, the driver needs to come instantly to full alertness and take control of the vehicle because autopilot doesn't know how to cope. Humans are not wired that way. So, inevitably, there will be cases where the autopilot disengages and the human is putting on makeup or posting to Insta or sending dick pics or whatever it is, whatever other vapid things you people do when you're in the driver's seat staring at your phone instead of looking down at the road. And yes, I can see you. Just so you know, nobody before 2007, no matter how well endowed or blessed they may have been, nobody walks around all day staring at their own crotch before the invention of the smartphone. Don't think we other drivers don't realize what you're doing. And then when autopilot disengages, the inevitable happens. The computer disengages, the human driver, who was never engaged to begin with, fails to take over, and your car ends up as another statistic. The NHTSA filing used the phrase, quote, a weak driver engagement system, because they think that seems to be the solution. The driver engagement system in a Tesla car is a code phrase for a set of super creepy sensors and cameras that scan where your hands are, where your eyes are looking at all times while the autopilot is in use. Anytime it detects that you're not in a state of stiff-spined, stark butt-puckering attention, it sends a series of beeps and chimes in order to nag you into paying attention to it. Which you won't be because, duh, nobody can pay attention for that long, especially when you're not even driving. The NHTSA basically identified the problem is that Tesla's autopilot is not annoying enough and wanted to act even more like an attention-seeking five-year-old while the car is busy helping, quote, reduce driver workload by taking away some of the monotony of operating a large, dangerous piece of equipment at high speed, mere meters from other people doing exactly the same thing. It should be noted that this study only used data on accidents up to 2021, and they only studied under 1,000 total wrecks, presumably because they had to manually review each and every one. That takes effort, and these are government workers, so not exactly motivated to work fast or efficiently anyway. Less than 1,000 is not that many, considering there are an average of 23 automobile accidents somewhere in the United States every 60 seconds. Yes, I looked that stat up. Legally, Tesla believes that they are covered from liability. After all, the company warns purchasers via the owner's manual, which, for the sake of derision, I assume the owner's manual is only available online from a website that you get to by scanning a QR code like a restaurant menu. Prove me wrong. Tesla warns purchasers that they should not operate autopilot in any case where there may be, quote, bicycles, pedestrians, or other unexpected obstructions near the vehicle. Unexpected obstructions I take to include other vehicles, road signs, heavy rain, light rain, sunshine, white or yellow paint on the road, asphalt, concrete, or oxygen near the vehicle. Responding to the report in a call with investors, Elon Musk had this to say. If somebody doesn't believe Tesla is going to solve autonomy, I think they should not be an investor in this company. Yeah, that's not how investing works, Elon. You don't have to believe a product will work. You just have to believe that you can make a shit ton of money while leading on your customers to think that maybe someday it might eventually work. From the "and nothing of value was lost" department. So, Windows 11 has been in the news for the last few months. For a piece of software, tech journalists sure write a lot about it. I assume because y'all keep sacrificing your computers to it. Microsoft is starting to make good on its Windows 11 promise to force users of older computers out of the Windows ecosystem. Windows 11 is the first version with higher hardware requirements than the previous version since Windows Vista. But veteran Microsoft haters know that these requirements are usually all bluster and future-proofing. If you can get past the hardware check in the installer, you're usually good to go. After all, it's mostly the same code, right? Well, hackers who use the internet-published methods for getting around the installer have run Windows 7 on hardware as old as the XP-era AMD Athlon and Intel Core 2 Duo, which was the first mass-produced multi-core processor that we're talking 2000s. Well, the future is now, so if you're running Windows 7 as of the 11 as of the 24H2 update, which is to be released this summer and already in beta, then a number of, quote, critical components, aka bits of the kernel, are finally making use of instructions that were introduced in the last 20 years, rendering those old XP-era systems fully incapable of running the newest OS. For those who speak assembly language, the instructions required are from SSE 4 and 4.2. Notably, the one that got all the press was PopCNT instruction, which got a lot of press from people who don't know what it does. Possibly got a lot of press because if you say PopCNT wrong, it sounds vaguely dirty, and that appeals to all of our inner 14-year-olds. So, what can you get for this forced upgrade to post-2014 hardware? Well, Windows 11 has some UI, quote, improvements. And yes, I did in fact do air quotes in front of the microphone when I said that. You could see this on the video if I took video. They moved some icons and text around. Seriously, as far as I can tell, that's what they did. Hot take, Windows UI peaked in Windows 8, and they've just been coasting ever since. What else did they do? They moved some more of the control panel buttons into the Settings app. Not all, just some, like the power and sleep settings, but you still got the control panel and the settings, and if you want to change everything, you still need both, so okay, fine. They added an AI file explorer. The marketing name of this is Advanced Copilot. Basically, it's the evolution of Cortana, because AI is the current fad in computing that big software companies are sprinkling on everything. And because Microsoft couldn't take the hint that nobody wanted Cortana the first time around, I guess. This new AI is the stated reason for the more stringent hardware requirements, by the way, proving once again that Microsoft knows their audience so well. After all, who wouldn't want to take an art generator that creates six-fingered, historically inaccurate images and a text assistant that can somehow turn a yes-no answer into four paragraphs over just being able to get your work done on hardware you already own? Microsoft added a context menu that lets you manage .zip and .tar files directly from Windows Explorer, something that 7-Zip and WinRAR have been able to do much better for 20 years. To be honest, you can forgive for not knowing whether that these features were missing from Windows, because if you didn't have them already via a third-party app, your IT guy probably set one up. A command line improvement. I gotta say, I'm actually kind of excited about this one. They added sudo. I'm not kidding. It grants the ability to, quote, run as administrator, which is a feature that's been in the right-click menu in Explorer since Windows Vista, from within a command prompt, and it's called sudo. As a command line junkie, this is the only new feature that gets me, that actually I care about. Kind of gets me excited. Run as administrator is not a security boundary, and there's lots of other ways to do it, so it might be a sort of half-ass, but it's a real convenience feature. I'm pretty sure I wrote a three-line batch file for myself that did exactly the same thing back in 2007, but hey, cool that they're finally putting it into the OS. Oh, what else? The Windows Mail app is going away. Microsoft is forcing its users to upgrade to the new Outlook client instead. This makes sense from an engineering perspective. Why bother maintaining two code bases for two different mail clients when you can just unify them? Of course, the two clients don't even remotely look or feel the same, which will probably annoy those who prefer the Mail UI over Outlook. Tough, you know, time marches on. But there's a bigger catch. If you're not paying for Microsoft 365, then Outlook comes with ads. Not like sidebar ads where you can just kind of ignore them out of the corner of your eye or put another window on top, but ads for things you don't want inserted into your inbox list where they look a lot like new messages. Yeah, I know, Gmail users, you're probably fine with ads littered across your inbox like so many turds in your egg salad, but those of us who don't use Gmail still have the expectation that maybe what appears in my inbox is, well, incoming emails. Yeah, I know, fuck me for having standards, right? Anyway, if you hate the new Outlook look and feel, then for you, for now, you can go into Outlook settings and switch back to the old style client, although Microsoft has suggested that the option will be going away in a future version. If you hate the ads, though, those are probably here to stay. It might be time to switch to Thunderbird. Whoa. Microsoft also is putting more ads in the start menu. There's not much to say about this. I didn't just say a moment ago. You've been warned before and over again. They've been hinting at this for 5 years, playing with trying ads in the Windows 10 start menu. Sometime after Windows 7, Microsoft decided that even though you paid for the hardware and you pay for the electricity and you keep up the broadband to connect it, it's still not your computer because you are not Microsoft's customer. It is Microsoft's computer and they are using it to sell you to Microsoft's customer, their advertisers. And they're going to seek every micro dollar of rent that they can out of you. In this case, that means selling your eyeballs to advertisers in the one place in the OS they know you'll keep going back to look at, the start menu. Last month, an update with the memorable name of KB5036980 went out to the general public. If you have automatic updates turned on like a good little end user, you've probably already got it. If you don't have it, don't worry, it'll become a mandatory update soon. The KB adds, quote, recommended apps from the Microsoft Store, recommended by some AI in Redmond, I guess, and displayed in your start menu right alongside the programs that you use, want, and have installed. For now, there's a way to turn those off as well, deep in the Settings app under Personalization, Start, and Show Recommendations. But don't worry, that'll probably be removed soon, too. And finally, the Windows subsystem for Android is going away. This was one of those features Microsoft likes to do where they look at some other product that's doing well and go, hey, we can copy that. In this case, they realized that lots and lots of people are computing on mobile instead of the desktop, and they wanted a piece of that lucrative apps market. They spun up a ton of engineering effort to completely re-implement the entire Android API right there in Windows. And I'll tell you, B+ for engineering effort anyway. The system isn't bad. It runs most things if you can get them installed. The apps, however, never really showed up for Windows. Turns out Google would not play ball and open up the Play Store, of course. Why would they? So Microsoft instead partnered with Amazon to get apps, whose Amazon's App Store boasts approximately 7 total apps, none of which you've likely heard of. And so, like many of Microsoft's innovative, risky bets, they've ended up shuttering it within a release or two because nobody uses it. I mean, maybe the reason that nobody uses the new whiz-bang Microsoft initiatives is perhaps because we've seen this pattern about 24 times in the past. We know Microsoft isn't in it for the long haul. The moment the market goes the least bit soft, they'll shut it down and leave their early adopters without software support. That seems to be what's happening here. No more software support, no support, everything, all you early adopters, screw you, you got on, you're stuck with so much useless e-waste. But maybe I'm just bitter about my Zune and my Windows phone. Many angry thanks go out to the people who have continued to support this show even when there aren't any shows. Either that or they forgot to cancel their recurring PayPal donation. In either case, I am thankful. Oystein Berge, Brian Janak, Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley, Faye Zilla, Steve Edwards, Sharky, Christopher Reamer, and Rachel Zimmerman, all giving value even when they're only expecting maybe value will come. Hopefully this helps a little bit. I gotta be honest, knowing that there are people out there who like the show so much that they would even donate when I can't make new ones because of that annoying real life thing, that's the kind of value for value that really just makes me want to keep going. No matter how many times I'll look at this and go, I don't have time for that, that's too much work, I keep wanting to do it because there's people out there who really like this stuff and really want me to keep going. Angry Tech News is produced on the value for value model. We don't take sponsors, we don't play ads, we don't charge you to listen, but we are funded by your donations. If you received some value from listening to this show and you think I deserve any value for making it, please send some back. Go to angrytechnews.com and click on the donate button. Send what you think this episode was worth to you, whether it's $5, $55, or the price of a Logitech mouse with new AI buttons. Sadly, at this moment, there's only PayPal options for donation. I've let my Satoshi Acceptor device go too long without maintenance, and it needs an overhaul. Free time being at a premium these days, I haven't made time to get it running, and call me old-fashioned, I still think it's more important to spend my time making the show than to work on the tech for a show without content. So anyway, that's it for now. I'm Ryan Bemrose, the Angry Programmer with a mic. I'll be back next time with more Angry Tech News.
This has been Angry Tech News with the angry programmer Ryan Bemrose at angrytechnews.com. Stay angry. Stay angry. Stay angry.